Yeah, he's our favorite nerd. Helping you make sense of technology. Here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We have a bunch in store for you here on this week's Computer Talk Radio. I'm going to continue on the IT Pro series. I've got a series going, and this will be the second of four, where I rebut common statements about why return to work is so important. I've got a number of listener questions as well. Carlos, is media exaggerating the risks of AI taking over jobs? Dan, he was almost scammed, and I give my various thoughts on how he reacted to it. Luke, he wanted to know if overclocking voids the warranty. Travis, how can we balance adoption of AI against protection of American values and jobs? Steve Keske is going to talk with me in regards to programming on punch cards versus modern programming. Marty, he's going to review the Artiphone Corda Music Maker keyboard. On the scam series, I'm going to unpack a crypto scam for general knowledge. And Keith M. Zedor, he's going to give us a quick look back at 10 years with me here on Computer Talk Radio. If you miss any of this, of course, feel free to check out the website at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can also reach out to us there. You can also phone me if you have any computer questions, technology concerns. The phone number, 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-6373-888. Let's dive into the news. And first on my mind is it was supposed to be a 7-day trip to the International Space Station, and it turned into 285 days. The good news is that Suni Williams and Butch Wilmore have ended their Gilligan's Island in space experience. Through the experience, both of them have been upbeat. They broke records, and they worked on a variety of experiments that were only available in space on the International Space Station. Tuesday evening, they returned on a SpaceX craft with SpaceX spacesuits in what is really the latest blow in the space program for Boeing. The fate of the Boeing Starliner program has yet to be revealed, but with it being so long since we heard news on it, I am left to wonder if perhaps that non-answer is our real answer. Time is only going to tell, but I am so glad that Suni and Butch are home at last. Hewlett-Packard settled one of their court cases about non-HP toner and ink this week. It's not the settlement we wanted, it's customers. Filed in November 2020, the lawsuit alleged that HP wrongfully compels their users to buy and use only HP ink and toner. And they did that through these dynamic updates out to the printers. Hewlett-Packard claimed it was anti-hacking updates, but the security experts out there largely say that this is baseless. The settlement was laughable. Three plaintiffs got $5,000 each. $725,000 went to the lawyers. And you and I, we got a disclosure that Hewlett-Packard is going to continue business as usual. And yeah, that's not good. $17.4 billion in printer revenue in 2024. And Hewlett-Packard is concerned about the occasional third-party ink. I fear that next we're going to hear that Chevy trucks will only work with their in-house branded oil and Fords will only accept Goodyear tires. Who knows what's coming at us, but that is not good news for any of us. Windows 11 continues to have strange experiences. I've been very reluctant to move my primary machine, and it's actually my last Windows machine, over to Windows 11 for a number of reasons. This week, Microsoft didn't help with their latest patching update earlier in the month, unintentionally uninstalling Copilot. That's the AI system, artificial intelligence on our desktop. Yes, it can be downloaded again, but many haven't been happy with it anyway. I'm setting aside time for the full backup of my system in multiple forms, and I am planning to make the jump, but this just unsettled me yet again. Just over 60% of people are on Windows 10 and just under 40% on Windows 11. Here, what are we, 2.5 years in? Whatever it is, I can't even remember. It's been so long. This is a telling tale of Microsoft's woes. Now, Microsoft did release an emergency update this week so that, yes, Copilot will go back onto those systems. But this is not where we would usually see emergency patching. Usually we see this emergency patching for various things like, oh yeah, security updates, like our systems are all vulnerable and things like that. Now, at the end of January, some good news came in the form of an announcement for smartwatch users. And we go back in time for this. Pebble OS was made open source by Google, and the inventor of the Pebble Watch, this goes back to 2012 when they first released their first Pebble Watch. So the inventor announced a new venture in January called ReePebble. This week, the announced two new updated versions coming later this year, advancing on the last series, which, again, we're talking, this is 10 years ago. They're advancing with a few new features. I'm definitely happy about the new battery time. We're talking 30 days of battery life. There's an increase in features and a lot of other things. This is really good news. It is definitely tempting me away from my mechanical watches, and the price point is distinctly alluring when you compare it up to the many other smartwatches out there. We are going to have to wait and see how this evolves, but I am looking forward to seeing Pebble compete and drive innovation again. We're looking at July for delivery on the first set of the watches, basically made out of plastic, plastic casing and all, and then a metal casing that'll be coming in the December timeframe. That's the current look at those. Now, there's a clickbait headline that went around this last week, and it's all about this dramatic speed cap for Starlink users. After you use 40 gigabytes of data, your cap kicks in and downgrades your service to 1 megabit. That was a speed that was considered hideous back 20 years ago. Yes, out in rural areas, you deal with it, but wow. The gotcha here in this clickbait is that it's only on a specific type of business account, and it's not on the residential users that most of us are. Still, in the office, this is a distinctly crippling hit when you're trying to do business in the modern age. Okay, so there are upgrade paths, but this isn't the least bit business-friendly. Sure, they have the upgrade path. You can pay a chunk of change and add in 50 gigabytes or 500 gigabytes. And there's various higher options when you start looking at a terabyte or 2 terabytes. 2 terabytes from memory. I don't have it up in front of me. I think it's touching about $1,000. This is not good. When everything is going cloud, this is going to hurt a lot for businesses. I would have suggested perhaps a more gentle slowdown rather than a near business ending lockdown, which the slowdown would have been far more appropriate. Instead, they're barely leaving enough there for people to download email these days. That's I don't know what they were thinking. Now, Amazon. And this is for those of you who are privacy-minded but still have Amazon Echo devices. So the entire ecosystem is changing. We've been aware of this for Alexa Plus. On 4th-gen Echo Dots and the Echo Show 10 and the 15 as well, you used to be able to have local processing. And you would keep your information, no pun intended, in-house. As a part of this Alexa Plus process, as we're rolling this out, or they're rolling this out, and we start getting it, it seems that they are now moving all of the Alexa, what time is it, and all of that. They're moving that process to the cloud, having their servers do the work. They do say that if you choose this particular option that says don't save recordings, that the recordings, your voice and all of that are going to be deleted after the Alexa request is processed. But this does raise questions about their future directions, where they're going, how they plan and not share with what they're going to be doing with our information, our voice, all of our data, all of that. This will be interesting to watch, and we will be watching that a lot here at Computer Talk Radio. Coming up next, Dan. He was almost scammed. And I'm going to give various, well, there's a little bit of rambling in there, but some various thoughts on how we should all be reacting to anything that happens to us like this. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
going down.
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Dan reached out to me with a question that he had, and this is a bit longer of a question, so I'm going to save it for just a moment. It was in regards to a scammer that reached out to him. And he realized it was a scammer pretty soon, but we'll get into that here in just a moment. The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. So Dan's message, help, we received a call from an alleged rep from MasterCard and then grew suspicious. We got off the call, hopefully in time. He had info on our credit card charges. So, we called the number on the back of our MasterCard and canceled the cards with no unknown charges shown. He may have had some way to get into our computer to get access to our information. What should we do to ensure that there is no unauthorized access to our computer? All right, so it's a long question. There's a lot to this. So, let's start off with the kind of the information that he received. So a lot of different charges that they had a history of. Typically, this isn't information that's going to be sitting on our computer. The ability to obtain your charge information by scammers can come from a lot of different locations. Your computer is a great place for them to pick up, yes, utilizing various tricks and ploys that they've got on your system with malware. They can pick up your credit card, but typically not all of that history. And that's where it becomes a little bit more tricky. They can access your bank through dial-in process. They can access it via your login, but also through many other different sources within various banks themselves. So if they've got a bank that's got somebody on the inside, they can get that information in other ways. They can also get information through various hacks that they do and various other database accesses that are out there. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Dan's computer was in some way infected or even accessed. Now, let's talk about Dan's approach. He ordered up new cards. That is perfect. He changed passwords, and he also reset his PIN. Those are very good things. I actually communicated back and forth with him a little bit. So this is really good stuff. You're stopping them in their tracks right there. So they won't have access to anything on those cards going forward. Now, that is a great start to this, but there's a lot more that you can do. There are a variety of different controls that anyone can put into place depending on the bank. And these controls include things like one of my banks. There is a way to turn on and off access to the card. You turn it on when you're going to use it. You turn it off when you want to place that card on hold. That is a great thing to have put in place. You can set up something like this, and they do have ways to make sure that your routine purchases, your subscriptions and things like that will actually continue through as normal. And then we start also thinking about that ability for scammers to access your computer, your smartphone. And while it's possible, it's actually, given what I've heard here, it's a lot more rare. They had a lot of insight into recent transactions. Unfortunately, the ability for any of us to determine the source of their knowledge is actually rather difficult. So there is something else that we can do with a bank. We can turn on notifications. This is one of the things I had this done a while back. I had one of my credit cards that was skimmed. So I said, all right, we have this ability to turn on all of the different card access that happened. And I can make a purchase. I go on out to a retailer, and it used to be, you know, you'd hand over the card and they would scan the card and then they would hand the card back to you. Well, I would actually get the notification that the charge went through before they even got that notification. So that was actually kind of fun. And that was before they would hand the card back to me. As a credit card, your bank and MasterCard actually do protect you from a lot of these different scams. And technically, there is a $50 potential charge, but most banks will waive that in the case of scammers. So there are things we can do along the way. So this monitoring the financial accounts, you set up your alerts, and this extends all the way on out through to the credit card score companies. I'm thinking of Experian and those folks. Make sure you've got that locked down. And yes, we can go through and we can look at the various installed programs in Task Manager for anything unusual, TeamViewer or any desk or log me in. But those actually, those remote access tools that we're all very familiar with are usually not even going to be the ones that the bad guys are going to use. They're going to use malware. They're going to use some kind of program that's hidden away. So I do suggest running something like Malwarebytes, or you can run your Windows Defender, or there's a number of different scanning software packages out there. You can also think about if you clicked a link or downloaded something as part of something kind of fishy before that, and you can think that your system could be compromised. In Dan's case, the back and forth didn't reveal anything like that. This is one of those things where anytime you experience this, there's a lot of stress there. I mean, getting a scam call feels a lot like realizing you left your front door wide open overnight and maybe nothing happened, but you can't really shake that feeling that somebody could have slipped in. So I want you to check everything out there. You want to lock everything down that you can, and you go through your passwords across the board, and you start going through with strong, unique passwords for each of them. And In this case, Dan and his wife, I suggested this for both of them. So both of their sets of passwords are going to be different. And then there's multi-factor authentication that you can throw in on this. So I got an update back from Dan. They went to the bank and closed out their accounts completely and opened up new ones. And then and they did that at both of their banks. And they are just, you know, they're processing through what are the potential impacts. And this is really good. You start thinking about all of the different areas that you use passwords. You think about all of the areas, the places where you used that particular PIN, and you want to start shutting all of those different areas down. And it's unfortunate. I've had people. I had my car broken into a number of years ago, and it's rough. You feel violated. And that's okay. It's a process you're going to have to go through. Unfortunately, the scammers, they don't have any consideration for us. They have no consideration for all of the impact that they're doing. They're looking for an easy buck, and that's unfortunate. In this case, I think Dan and his wife, they really went through and they tackled everything they could. And this is good. We aren't going to know until the long term plays out. But the real win all the way along here is Dan is thinking security conscious from here on out. And he's tightened down his security. And he's locked down his digital life to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't come back and haunt him again and again and again. And that's his recognizing this and leaving the call right away may actually have prevented any damage whatsoever. And that's the exciting part. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Keith Emcedor joins me now. And Keith, what do you have for us this week?
Well, it's not what I have. Well, it is. It's what I have for us. You usually say, what do you have? What do I have for us, Benjamin? This past week, Benjamin, is a milestone for you and me on Computer Talk Radio.
Okay.
We have been doing Computer Talk Radio together for 10 years. A decade ago.
It feels so much longer.
What?
I couldn't resist. It's been 10 years. It's been 10 years. Wow.
2015.
Okay.
Our good friend in the Apple community, Deb Shadovitz,
yeah,
asked me to fill in for her one time.
Yeah, once.
While she was going to be on sabbatical, and you and I hit it off.
10 years later, she's still on sabbatical. Wait, we've actually had her on about 3-4 times over the course of the last 10 years. Yeah, maybe a little more. Yeah.
But I don't think any of us expected my coming on and joining Computer Talk Radio to be anything more than a guest spot, you know, recurring as it was.
But yeah.
To turn into the Apple and Mac pundit for Computer Talk Radio was something I did not foresee. And it's something that has truly been enriching, and, you know, it gives a little extra street cred to my role as an Apple certified consultant. And I tell people, oh, I'm the Apple and Mac pundit on Computer Talk Radio. Oh, really? And a lot of times, to be fair to the non-techie, non-nerdy, non-geeky people, they're like, what's that? And I explain to them. And they're like, oh, really? How can I listen? Is it on the radio? Yeah. I said, well, yes, it is. In the Southwest and west of the Mississippi, it's on a number of radio stations. But here on the East Coast.
Nearest one to you is like Pennsylvania, I think.
Yeah, here on the East Coast, it's probably easiest if you go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts and, you know, search for Computer Talk Radio. And I do an 8-minute segment every week talking about something typically Apple related.
Sometimes cars. Sometimes
we'll hit something automotive.
Yeah, we do cover a number of different issues.
Yeah, sometimes it'll be completely off base and we'll just talk about something in the tech realm, something that falls under the heading of the myriad of topics that Computer Talk Radio discusses.
Well, as I say regularly, this is radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact you. But yeah, right. I mean, it's been an interesting journey along the way with you. Yeah, you and I went, what, 8 years, nine years before we met in person? Yeah.
But we even only working virtually, you know, because I record my segment with you online, and then, you know, it gets be, you know, the magic of radio, it gets incorporated into the rest of the show.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't just, oh, we're on for 8 minutes and that's the length of people hear us on the show.
Yeah.
And
that's
it. You know, we all actually talk for an hour or two before we record the segment each week. And, you know, we've actually struck up a friendship in there. I mean, I actually consider you one of my closest friends.
Before I hit record, just for the audience, before I hit record, I let him go for whatever it was, near 20 minutes on this rant in regards to, I don't even remember.
Upgrading to iOS 18.
Troubleshooting problems with his iPhone. But you know what, it has been fun all the way along, and this was Keith's chance to come on the show one last time to say farewell. No, I'm kidding. I'm looking forward to another 10 years.
Decade.
Another decade of doing this.
I mean, the reality of it is, Benjamin, beyond, you know, my bringing an Apple sensibility to what is largely a PC-based / broad tech-based show, and us having developed a really good friendship. I mean, usually you make one of those lasting friendships as kids, and, you know, you don't make a lot of adult friendships. But I'm really pleased that we have, because we've got a lot in common. And really, it's those things that we have in common that spawned several other podcasts
on
the Computer Talk Radio show, starting with the Computer Talk Radio Nerdcast.
Now,
we haven't recorded a Nerdcast in a while because we're both busy with...
When did we start that? We started that about a year in, maybe? Maybe two.
We did a number of episodes, and I go back and I listen to them sometimes, and they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But during that time, we started to get a little Star Trek centric. We invited some guys on who made some really high quality Star Trek fan films.
Yes.
And we invited a couple of other Star Trek fan friends who had some broadcast experience on, and we spun off a second podcast called the Trexperts Roundtable.
Yes.
Now, we haven't recorded one of those in over a year.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Well, that's true.
Trek is just falling apart. Yeah.
Yeah, the wheels are coming off the Trek train, and somebody needs
have to come off. They've just fallen right off, and nobody can even find them. That's how bad it is.
Well, that's true, too. So I'm thinking we need to go back and revisit What made the Trexperts Roundtable special with our other Trek loving friends?
Yeah.
Most of whom would rather just watch old Trek anyway and talk about things like that. But I still don't know how this manifested itself, because it was not a direct result of anything we were doing on the Nerdcast or the Trexperts Roundtable, but we spawned a Gen X themed podcast about breakfast cereal called
Just Pour the Milk.
Yes. And that is still active. We just dropped an episode about a week and a half ago. So I hope everybody checks that out. But that's still going strong. And the funny thing is Benjamin is not a big fan of cereal, not a big fan of
cereal. No. I'm a fan of cereal. Don't get me wrong. I just don't go for anything that kids would eat.
Right. So to that end, while the rest of us are reminiscing about the golden age of cereal in the 70s and the 80s and Saturday morning cartoons, we say lovingly that Benjamin is our cereal foil, and he gets diabetes just from looking at the box.
Well, it is true. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf, ready for another decade with Computer Talk Radio, my good friend Benjamin Rockwell.
I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs, where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-637-3888. If you have questions for me or anybody on the team, feel free to reach out. If I don't answer, leave a message. I will get back with you. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Music. Do you like music?
I love music.
You won't if I do it.
Well, likewise, you know, I mix sound, but I would never, ever deign to get up in front of anybody and play any instrument whatsoever.
Oh no, but really, that's a skill set that you may want to develop. If you want to empty your room very quickly, perform and be bad.
Hey, folks, you know what? It's time to leave. And as a special gift for you, I will play the acoustic guitar for the next 3 minutes.
That's wonderful.
Send them all running.
or do Tiny Tim.
Oh, man.
Early in my career.
Yeah.
You know, for me, everything is early because it's very late in my career. I did make some serious side money writing commercial jingle lyrics.
Okay, yeah.
Like anybody who remembers, come on along with ABC, we're going strong, it's you and me. Aren't you glad I didn't have to sing it? That was one of 3 years we did it for the ABC Fall promo. Also, there's a celebration all across the nation. Now is the time. ABC is the place. And that one won me a Clio. So
very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did some good extra revenue in those days.
And you've got a better singing voice than I do.
Well, thank you. Well, doing all that, I often had to remind myself of the tune to which I was kind of Lego blocking the words.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't often near a piano.
Mm-hmm.
So I would grab one of the kids' music keyboard toys or sometimes a flutophone.
Wait, what's a flutophone?
It was used, pardon me, I think it was always third grade.
Yeah.
The professional version is called a recorder.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
You blow in one end, it's like a tunable whistle with keys.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Then, you know, came all those CES announcements, including one from Artiphon. This is Artiphon, if you want to look them up. If you're learning music, it's kind of an amazing little company, Artiphon.
Okay.
They have a music keyboard that's much more than just a keyboard. If you or somebody you know is learning music, it's kind of fun. It can be like playing guitar or drums or piano or a synth, some other voices too.
Sure, okay.
And then you can play with the attributes like the strum or vibrato.
Okay, all right.
You can layer to add drum and bass and chords to the lead, and there's more. It's really, you plunge in. There's a lot of ways to go. This keyboard. And keyboard and then some is called Corda, Chorda.
Okay.
Corda. It's not much bigger than a long French bread.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But it is a lot more tuneful. The Artiphon Corda is about $250.
Okay, so it's a smaller musical instrument. It's a keyboard. It's but it's a fully standalone thing. It's not plug into the computer. Actually, these days, can it plug into the computer and MIDI interface and things like that? Okay.
Well, the MIDI is limited to some extent.
Okay.
But yeah, and you can store what you've learned and add it back in and all of that stuff. I always thought, what happened to somebody that they would invent the accordion? Here's all these reeds, each one going and then you put the keys on them, you're doing seven at a time.
You start making parody songs and change your name to Weird Al.
That could work. That's, you know,
yes.
And in fact, you may not know this, but in an era before Weird Al, there was a Cleveland area polka band, Frankie Yankovic.
Yes.
Sometimes called Frankie Yankovic and the Yankees.
Yes, yes, yes.
With big hit tunes like Who Stole the Kishka?
Who stole? Okay. I don't even know what a Kishka is, but it still sounds interesting. Was that his dad?
I don't believe they're related at all. Or if they are, it's distantly.
So I know his dad was also a professional polka player.
Weird coincidence if they're not related.
Yeah, well, I don't know how popular the name is or anything like that, but yeah, we actually went to a Weird Al concert back a number of years ago. My wife, myself, and my son, and it was about a week after his dad passed away, and we were wondering how's this going to play out. And he did an amazing set, got to where you would normally do the fake ending.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of the fake ending, he pulled up a stool and he talked for about 10 minutes about the impact that his dad had on his life, on his music and all of that.
That's
fabulous. And then didn't do the fake ending, went straight into the typical encore. And it was absolutely an amazing concert.
I have the most enormous respect for Al Yankovic. The music is tip of the iceberg of what we hear.
Yeah.
The things he's doing, fabulous.
Definitely. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me.
After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And this one popped up, and it just because it's cryptocurrency and you don't deal with cryptocurrency, I want you to stick with me here because this is going to give us an idea in regards to how the scammers are getting far more sophisticated every day. And I got this text message, and it was in regards to my Coinbase verification code. And it gave a number: do not share this code with anyone. If it was not you, please call this phone number. And they give a reference number. And that is already starting to open up a lot of different things. Okay, so I'm not with Coinbase, and I don't have any cryptocurrency, so I don't have to worry about any of this. But I am watching what the scam is doing. So this series of scams is working off of some more recent news from Coinbase and some other folks out there. And it's looking for people to the goal is to move you to the next step. And they want you to transition to a self-custodial wallet. They want you to perform a series of actions that will give you instructions. And these instructions will download the legitimate Coinbase wallet. And you've got a certain deadline. But along the way, you're also going to have some pre-generated recovery phrases. And this is just a process here where they're trying to get you to walk through a certain set of actions. And once you go through, once you open up that new wallet with those phrases and you transfer the funds from your own account into this other account, all of those assets that you've got there, all of those cryptocurrencies will be available to the scammer, who can then pull them out. And all they're doing is they're working, yes, a number of different scams all at once, a matter of getting you to click forward. They're tracking who you are through that reference number. They're going through and they're setting up that urgency in the message. In the follow-up tasks, they are telling you, hey, things are changing. And this is all, of course, to protect you. This is all a matter of protecting your money and all of that. And they're driving a little bit more urgency, and they're getting you to do something that you wouldn't normally do if you knew it was a bad guy on the other side. I will tell you, each of these different things where they tell you, we've seen this with banks. Oh, we need to reset it. We caught scammers in your Wells Fargo account. This is just an example. And we need you to set up a new account. And they walk you through a variety of tasks. You just follow the instructions on this particular webpage. And then all of a sudden, the scammers are in there. Look, do not do anything blindly. Do not move forward with any of these different scams that are out there, especially if it's on an unsolicited SMS message, if it's coming in from some direction that you're not aware of. You need to always be aware that scammers are looking for your money. They're looking for your information. They're looking for more ways to leverage against you. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Your mouse is dead, and the computer is on life support. Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Guiding you on your computer quest, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. This is radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact you, me, and all of our lives. If you want to reach out with your questions, feel free to reach out at computertalkradio.com. That's computertalkradio.com. You can also phone us at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Steve Keske joins me now, and Steve has been, well, you've been retired from technology for, 15-plus years now?
Just about.
Yeah. And I do want to take you back, and I want to take you back to those very early days when you were in computing, and coding was done on punch cards.
Yep.
Let me have you quickly, so people understand what a punch card is, let me have you describe that.
Well, there's two different types of punch cards.
Okay.
Okay. There was the IBM punch card that had, in each column, had 0 through 9 plus two more codes above that.
Mm-hmm.
And you would punch in whatever number or letter you wanted. And it would punch the corresponding holes in the card. And those were rectangular in shape.
Okay.
The other one was by Univac. But those cards were circles.
Okay.
And punched about the same. But in the IBM, you only had 80 columns. And in the Univac, you had 90 columns.
Okay.
Yeah, a same size of card. The basic problem with coding was, hey, once you punch the card, you can't redo it.
Yes, very true. So that meant you had
no
to take your time.
Key, you know, people.
Yeah, if you made one mistake out of the many different options for punching holes, you would have to restart that individual card all over again.
All over again.
Okay, so you really had to go through this slowly, methodically, and this was the way for computing for a number of years.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we moved into more modern computing, and we're talking about in the 70s and 80s, where we moved into magnetic tapes and the big, huge reels that we see in the movies from that period. And you still had to be very, very careful because you couldn't waste any space on those tapes, on any of that magnetic media, because you had a limited amount of that media.
Well, you have to understand this really,
sure,
really well. In the early late 70s, early 80s,
mm-hmm,
they were moving from punch card input to terminal input. And these were called dumb terminals because you could only input the data. Well, at the same time, you had a program that would accept the data, but it would also do a lot of editing on, and it would come back and say, I know you did that one wrong. So you had a little bit more flexibility because you didn't have to have that punch card and saying, okay, I did it wrong. Now I got to go back and re-punch the card and re-input the data and redo a whole bunch of stuff. And then this was basically with punch card, I mean with tape, and again the input was magnetic tape was no it was no random access. It was serial computer. You know, and so like your computer, your PC, or your laptop, and all of that is all random access. Which means I can go to the particular item on the disk and say, this is what I want to read or this is what I want to write. And here's when I want to do it, which is all well and good, but it doesn't take as much time because our computer kept getting faster and faster.
So kind of where I wanted to go with this, though, is you had to be very careful. You had to be methodical. You had to take a lot of care. In the modern day, we have seen where programmers seem to put out a lot of lines of code. You know, we're talking about some of these later versions of Windows have somewhere around 40 to 50 million lines of code. And there's a lot of a change along the way here. There's I know if I go and I code something, and it isn't very often I do it, but I can go and I can code up something and I get a response right away and I can tweak that if there's things I want to improve or I want to change or I want to correct. I've got instant gratification. I don't have to go on out to that punch card and punch a whole bunch of different holes. What would you say? Is it better for us to be able to barrel forward and get that instant response, or is it better to have that, I'm imagining that nice, steady, slow, methodical pace?
Well, I would say somewhere in between. The whole idea of punching cards for a program would probably take at least 8 hours or something to not only read it all in, then you had to go through all the compilers and everything else, and then then it would tell you what the errors were. Now you're going in, you're just typing in it, and it's executing it right now. That's the big problem. That's why I say somewhere in between all of that work ahead of time and all of the instant gratification today. And biggest problem with that are you're leaving more holes in your coding than you would have if you were doing it way back when, because you had all that time between the time that you wrote the program to the time that it actually was working. And you could put in a whole lot more edits and things in this order that they may or may not be doing today until after the second or third or fourth version. And that, to me, is the biggest problem, because now you're leaving more holes in your program than we did before.
Well, not only that, but there's a lot of waste that I think happens. And I've heard varying statistics over the course of the years that anywhere from 3 to 5 to 10% of the code that is actually loaded into various programs, you know, you load up a program that is, you know, it's 10 gigs in size, is as much as a good portion of that is actually abandoned code, which they no longer use because, well, I thought Joe was using this. I thought Steve was using this particular subroutine. And everybody's just like, okay, well, it all works. So let's move forward.
Yeah. And the other good thing or problem is modular programming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where your subroutines, they may be stored. They may still be in the printout, but they may or may not be used. And if they're not used, get rid of them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So there's a lot there. I what do you think we're going to, just based off of this, where do you think we're going to go with programming? I know today we've got people who specialize in different areas of programming, different computer languages. We've got a lot of quality engineers working on just checking what the programmers did. Real quick, what do you think is going to happen? How will this balance out?
I think we're going to go more for speech input, and then you got the other people on the other end saying, wait a minute here, we got to test this out before we can put it live.
Mm-hmm.
And the programmers are saying, no, you don't. Oh, yes, you do. You didn't put in edits for all of this other stuff.
Yeah, so it's going to be... It's going to require probably a lot of more, a lot more discipline. Yeah.
Attention to details.
All right. So, yeah, there we go. That is Steve Kesky. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh, yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh, yeah, the promo. 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Luke reached out to me. He wanted to know about overclocking his computer and warranties. I'll get to that here in just a moment. The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. So Luke reached out and he wanted to know if he overclocked his computer. Is he basically kissing his warranty goodbye? And he wanted to also know about the pros and cons of bumping up the performance utilizing something like this. So let's dive into this. And overclocking is something that there are people out there that do it. And it's like tuning a car's engine to squeeze out extra horsepower. Now, you might get more speed, but in this, you are putting a strain on the system. If something goes wrong, the manufacturer of whatever hardware that you have may not be as keen on fixing it as you would hope they would be. And that's because you're pushing it beyond certain limits. There is a few different caveats that come with this. So manufacturers can't just void your entire warranty because you went into the BIOS and you made some tweaks, you made some settings changes, you decided, hey, it's going to be better if I bump up the speed by doing this. There's something called the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. And this really comes to the rescue for a lot of it. The U.S. law that's been around since the 1970s actually prevents companies from voiding an entire warranty just because you went in and you did some tweaks, just because you opened up the case and you put in a new video card, you've done something that they don't like, whatever it is, there is a requirement, an onus upon those manufacturers to prove that overclocking directly caused the failure, the replacement of the existing video card and putting in a new video card. That was what caused the problem. Whatever it is, if your GPU, your CPU dies from a factory defect, the manufacturer can't deny your claim just because you made it run faster or whatever it is. Now, if the action you take, whatever it is, in this overclocking, if it fries your CPU or your GPU, then yeah, then in that point, they are protected and they don't have to cover that part. So you do need to check into the policies in regards to that hardware. Some of the companies, Intel and AMD, they do offer overclocking friendly warranties on some of their products. And this is not something I want to do a deep dive on. Just be aware that there are certain things that they do allow to allow you to bump it up. Now, you may wind up running into some of the problems that do come with overclocking, and we'll get to that here in a moment. If your warranty explicitly states that overclocking voids coverage on specific parts, then they can hold you to that. So there are some upsides. If you're not aware of what overclocking it is, it's basically similar to what I mentioned earlier about tweaking the engine in your car to get a little bit more horsepower, or to actually even one of the things people will do also when gas goes up is they will bring it back down with the cars. You typically aren't going to do that with your computer, but you've got that ability to go through and adjust things. When you're overclocking, you do gain a boost in performance in CPU, GPU intensive tasks like gaming, for video editing, for 3D rendering, and you don't have to spend extra cash. And that's something that there are people out there that do this. Just a little reminder along the way, this may drive your fans more. This may require additional cooling that you do not have. So you need to be aware that there are various steps that you're going to take in this direction that may give you some problems. So if you're into this idea of hardware tweaking, overclocking will help you understand system behavior. It'll help you understand cooling. It will help you understand performance bottlenecks. At the same time, we need to back through that exact same statement. You should also be researching all of those behaviors, all of those different cooling things, all of those different performance bottlenecks. Just because you bump up the speed of your CPU and your GPU doesn't mean it's going to solve the problems that you're chasing after. Now, overclocking can extend the useful life of older hardware and will allow your system to stay competitive for a little bit while longer if you're willing to push it harder. It is great for learning and experimenting with tech. It's great for a lot of the different things that are out there. Now, let's go through the different cons of overclocking. First up, heat is your enemy. And overclocking will increase power consumption. It will increase the heat output. It means that you need to be going through and ensuring you have the best cooling solution for your system. This may be a matter of the airflow within your system. This may be a matter of there are people out there that do a wide variety of liquid cooling. I have not dived into overclocking in well over a decade. It could be even longer. Yes, there's going to be more power usage, and that means there's going to be less efficiency on your system. Overclocking will make those components less energy efficient, and that can be an impact on your electrical bill. We also have stability issues and crashes that come through with this. If you're pushing that system too hard, the CPU is designed and tested to put out specific numbers to specific math tests over the course of the testing period. And if you're changing up a lot of how your system is dealing with those numbers, those different processes, then you can wind up with a lot of different issues like corrupted files, yes, increased instability. Yes, you can wind up crashing your system more frequently. And this will pop up in a number of different ways. There is no one specific way. You may decide to overclock your system and everything runs fine, but you go to run one specific game and it just can't handle it and it crashes. This can be a rough one to track down. Some of the problems that creep in over the course of this overclocking may not be immediately attributable to the overclocking. They may just pop up there and you're going, why is it doing that? Everything else is working just fine. So you have to keep that in mind. I will tell you that increased voltage and heat, it will wear out the chips faster, especially if your cooling isn't up to the task. This is something that I stopped tinkering with it a while back, mostly because the amount of gain we get these days out of overclocking isn't worth the headache. It isn't worth all of the different little problems that can pop up. And this is from my approach. For everyone else out there, you have to make that decision on your own. Overclocking, to me, I see it as a calculated risk. It can help increase performance. But again, it's going to add the heat, the power draw, the potential instability. We get back to the legality of it. Your entire warranty, it can't be voided just because you did that. Again, thanks to Magnus and Moss. But if your tweaks directly cause damage, that part's actually on you. If you decide to do this, if you decide to go in this direction, make sure you're documenting down exactly what you've got going. Make sure you know what you're doing. Make sure you've studied this out very carefully. Make sure you've got the proper cooling and you have your exit strategy. This is all about knowing how far to push without turning your rig into a very expensive paperweight. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Travis reached out at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. And his question was about balancing the rapid adoption of an artificial intelligence, AI, with the need to protect our American values and jobs and things like that. And this is kind of a tricky thing, as AI is really coming along fast. And I think of AI and how it's introducing all of these different things, and it's giving us a lot of power. It's giving us a lot of control over data. It allows us to look across all kinds of different things. And yes, we can use it to answer questions, especially in the business environment. And we can use it to kind of build our knowledge and a lot of different things. Adopting AI, it can be attributed, not attributed, related to something like introducing automation into a family-run farm. And it can make work more efficient, but I want to stick with that whole idea of the values there. It should never, ever replace the heart and soul of the operation. Even big corporations are adopting AI, but if they adopt AI and forget about a people culture, that can run into some serious problems. It needs to be balanced. It needs to be protecting progress, but also the livelihood, the morale, the whole reason for having the company in the first place. So yes, we need to be supporting policies that prioritize American-made AI solutions, and we need to be ensuring that we've got less reliance on foreign technologies. I'm thinking like DeepSeek there and stuff like that. And we do have, you know, Sam Altman's moving forward with ChatGPT, and that's a great direction to be going in. And we're utilizing the GPUs that are made from NVIDIA, which is, yes, here in the United States, and it's a publicly held corporation. And we need to be sure that we are continuing forward on that path. Along the way, displaced workers should be retrained. Okay, we know AI's taken over Joe's job. We shouldn't be kicking Joe to the curb. We need to equip Joe and all of the other workers with the skills to thrive in the AI-driven economy without leaving them behind. Or we need to find a new place for Joe and anyone who cannot handle the AI portion of it. Because AI is, yes, a technology-driven, but also a technology-used tool. It takes some special knowledge and training to get there. So maybe it's retraining Joe, and maybe it's putting Joe into a different position where we utilize his skill, his knowledge, and yes, his very heart and soul, as I mentioned, for the family-run farm. We do need to be watching AI and make sure that AI systems and the different algorithms that we're building with them, we need to make sure that they align with the company values, and we need to make sure that they are accountable, whatever we're getting out of them. And we need to make sure that we're not just putting AI in place to prioritize profit. Again, I'm focusing a bit on the business side because that's really a lot of where we're at with AI. It's going to eventually come into our homes, and it's going to do a bit of disruption. But a lot of what Travis was asking was about American values and American jobs. So kind of want to balance that. We do need to make sure that we are pushing for human-centered roles, and we can integrate AI into each of our jobs. We can enhance our jobs. We can make our jobs better by utilizing the output of those AI tools. But we need to make sure that we don't abandon the human touch, the human side of these interactions. And we can see this. We can see this across the country, across the world, where we used to have someone physically answering the phone. Hi, this is Benjamin. How can I help you? How can I route your call? Who can I connect you with? That has gone away to the whole press 1 if you'd like to speak to sales. Press 2 if you'd like to speak to someone in marketing. Press 3 if you'd like to check on your order and things like that. It's unfortunate, but yeah, hopefully companies have relocated those people to different positions rather than just saying, you're out of here, bye. We do need to be thinking about small businesses as well, because small enterprises aren't going to have the access to all of the AI tools that will allow them to stay competitive. without sacrificing their unique values. We need to be thinking about ways that small business, right? I mean, big business is definitely head over heels in love with AI, and they are going to be for a very long time. Small businesses need help in this world, and that is something that is going to take them a while to adapt and to really embrace that. And I think a lot of what I am shifting myself towards is being aware of those small businesses and trying to frequent them a little bit more than the giant behemoths. And that's one of those things that I'm just starting to process through. Now, this is me. I'm in tech. I've been in tech for my entire career, and I've been dealing with AI for a couple of years now. And I think that it's going to take a lot of effort on small businesses to get there. So just like that original analogy of that family farm and adapting to modern tools, yes, AI is going to be the future. It is going to enhance productivity, and it's going to be here for the foreseeable future. Think about the human element. Think about it in your life. Travis, you need to think about it in yours. Everybody listening, we need to be applying the tools while remembering every human along the way. And that will bring success to all of us. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of the things that are going on within the workplace. And sometimes I go in various directions that are more IT, and sometimes a little bit more personal computing, and sometimes a little bit more workplace. Right now, I'm in the middle of just a short little look. We spent some time on this last week, and we're going to spend a little bit more time now and in the coming week or two in regards to the idea of the return to office. Now, at this point, most of us have been working from home for right about 5 years. And there are some people who worked from home prior to that. There are some people who've already had the dreaded return to office mandate. And I still want to cover this because this is an ongoing discussion that a lot of us are having. And there are a lot of things that we're hearing from various companies, and I wanted to address some of these because I feel uncomfortable about them. I hear a lot of different people are being told, hey, this is a reason why you need to return to the office. And a lot of the things that I hear don't necessarily ring true to me. And I wanted to piece apart some of these. There's one that says that company culture dies without FaceTime. And I struggle with that. If company culture cannot survive some kind of video call, I'm not sure that was culture. It feels more like a hostage situation. I mean, look, free snacks and forced, you know, items like, I don't know, various games. They don't make up for micromanagement. They don't make up for burnout. They don't make up for a lot of the different things that are going on. Company culture is something that is about working together. And I can work together with people wherever they are in the country or around the world. As we've moved along, a lot of these different teams have become more than just everybody in this particular office that's on this team. That's all one team. And we don't have any other teams that are doing the same thing anywhere else in the world. That doesn't work anymore. So this is really a tough thing here. Culture. Culture is about trust and respect and shared values. And those values are decided based upon who we hire and who we work with and all of that. And we have company cultures that are very stodgy. And there are also cultures that are very laid back. And different companies have different ways that they approach culture. Some of it is, yes, getting along, being friendly. Others is getting the job done. Others is, let's make more money. And each one is going to have their own different way of dealing with this. So I don't know that we actually have to be next to each other in person for building culture. The company I work for today, they've been absolutely great as far as building a culture with an IT organization that's spread out across the country. As a matter of fact, of my team of 10 people, and the 10th being my manager, we have a few people, not even half of the people, are located anywhere near one of our offices. If I were to be called to go into the office, my nearest office is a good long day's drive away. It's a plane flight away. And we've got people who are further away from one of our major offices where they would have to go in. And that's something where we don't worry about FaceTime. If we want FaceTime, we can put up our cameras and we can talk to each other and all of that. And then there's this discussion that innovation requires office presence. And I'll tell you, innovation doesn't happen because people are sitting next to each other. Innovation happens because people are able to think about what they're working on. They are able to really go forward and start going in different directions and being more of individuals rather than lemmings all grouped together. I'll tell you, I think the biggest innovation killer out there is the idea that everybody needs to attend these meetings that last for hours on end that actually could have been done via an email, that could have been done with just a short conversation amongst a few people. I've been in so many meetings across my career, which were a matter of we're all going to gather together and we're going to sit for 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is, something interminable. It just felt like days on end. And my total involvement, both passively and actively, was about 10 minutes in that meeting. Now, we need to be reducing meetings, and there's stats out there. There's companies that are trying to do this. Look, if it can't be done in an hour, it should not be one meeting. It should be broken down, and we need to be dealing with the people a lot closer rather than en masse. And that is going to be something that we're going to have to continue to struggle with and to have to continue to deal with. Look, I get once a month, once a quarter, we have a big, huge video meeting and we have, you know, the big, huge thing. But I've been in companies where there was a 2-hour meeting every day and we're all sitting there and we're going, what? Why am I even here? I can be more productive sitting at my desk, taking care of the things that need to be taken care of. And perhaps I'll come up with new ideas, new innovation at the same time. Who knows? As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Carlos reached out to me. Is media exaggerating the risks of AI taking over jobs, or should I actually be worried? And I look at this, and I look at this kind of the same way that I look at weather forecasts. You know, we look at, you know, what is the weather going to be like in a week? And they say a storm is coming in, and when it arrives a week later, sometimes it's just a drizzle, and sometimes it's a hurricane. It's all kinds of disaster. You see, headlines love to paint AI as Skynet, that unstoppable force that's going to replace everyone. But there's a lot more to this. The reality is far more nuanced than any kind of headline. AI, artificial intelligence, is certainly going forward, and it is changing how people use technology. It's changing industries. It's changing a number of different things along the way. But its impact depends on how it's used and who controls it. Artificial intelligence is going to allow us to automate a lot of repetitive tasks. But there are so many different portions of everybody's job that still requires human judgment. It requires creativity. It requires morals and ethics that no machine is going to be able to replicate in the near future. There is a lot of usage of AI that is really proving out different formulas a little bit faster, or tracking a lot of different text and processing it. Even one of the things that I've seen is people will turn on Transcribe and they'll use Copilot to monitor a meeting and then provide notes from that meeting. Does it mean the meeting still happens? Yes. Does it mean that we've got notes right there at the end of the meeting? Yes. But does it mean that everything is obsolete at that point? No. We look back across history, and it shows that new technology will definitely displace some of the jobs, but it also creates entirely new industries. We can think about how the internet did kill some careers, but it spawned millions of new ones. We can look at the railroads, how they eliminated a lot of the wagon train concept and managed to move us from point A to point B a lot faster. We can look at the car and how it displaced the horse-drawn carriage. Well, it didn't fully displace it. The Amish are still out there. They're still in their carriages. So there are certain things that are going to change and certain things that are going to stay very similar to how you've been dealing with it. The real concern isn't AI itself, but how businesses and policymakers choose to implement it. So just like preparing for a storm, understanding AI's real capabilities is going to help you separate all of that media hype from all of the real, true, practical concerns that we all need to be thinking about on a regular basis. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.